Hello.
Hello.
All right. Shall we get started then?
Let's do it.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Flex Fox Fantasy Weekly Podcast. I am, as always, your host, Garth Newton, coming to you live from beautiful New Hamburg, Ontario, up here in my wonderful attic. And with me, as always, is the omnipresent trade master himself, Jeremiah the Wizkid Johnson. How's it going?
I like that. I like that omnipresent thing, although I might quickly get smited down by a higher deity than myself.
I mean, that just means you got to fight back a little harder. That's all that means.
I don't know. I wouldn't put myself on the level of like the anti-pope or anything, but I'm getting up there.
Okay. All right. I mean, you're certainly getting through a lot of trades. And I mean, this has also just been one heck of a week. I've taken the liberty of pulling together a couple of stats, but before I get into some of the overall stats that I found in week four, what were your high-level thoughts?
Man, this has got to be, I guess my high-level thought was, this has got to be the best week of fantasy that I remember for a while, like in terms of matchups being close, potential upsets. I know we're going to get into it, but I'm curious if you feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. And as is my way, I like to use stats to sort of justify my gut feeling. And it's kind of self-serving because I'm well aware that you can create any narrative you want if you just choose the right stats. But without having any of the historical knowledge, I agree. It certainly feels like this was one of the crazier weeks that we've seen for all of the reasons that you had mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you're going to go with the stats, but I will say, like, because I go off gut feeling, but I'll say, like, I think the biggest margin of victory was about 60 points. Maybe I'm a little bit wrong there. Maybe it was 70, but it seems like a lot of matchups were decided by, say, like 10 or less.
Well, funny you should mention that, because I do, in fact, have these stats. So I sat down and I ran the numbers, and off the top of your head, Jeremiah, and if you already know the answer, that's fine. You'll just look smart in front of all the people. How many undefeated teams lost this week?
Okay, so I actually don't, like, I just opened the scores. I don't know the answer. Okay. I will say the only one I can remember off the top of my head was Ian and Graham. I think we're both undefeated.
I'm gonna
go with two.
The answer is three. Three 3-0 teams fell this week. How many winless teams won?
If three fell, then at least three. So I'll say four.
So only two winless teams found their first victory this week. But in this week, how many teams do you think scored more than 200 points?
Oh, I think it's a high number. 15.
Close. The answer is actually 14, which is the highest that I can remember.
Okay.
And it sort of speaks to just why some of the rest of these stats get very, very, very silly. All right. Here's the next pop quiz. How many games were settled by 10 points or less?
So there's 10 matchups, right?
That's right.
I feel like it's got to be like six.
Six is the answer. Okay. And of those, how many were within seven or less?
Four.
Five.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There were a further two that was settled by 4 points or less, and even one that was finished by less than 1 point. So, yeah. To me, these stats kind of speak for themselves, but it was also just one of those weeks where everybody seemed to be commenting on just how ridiculous some of these things were and how many matchups were close and down to the wire. I mean, the narrative is huge on this week.
Well, but that's good for the league, isn't it? Like, it's good for the league, it's good for Slack, it's good for engagement, and it's good for just fun. Like, it's not good for your heart level or your blood pressure, maybe, if you're involved, but I think it's good overall.
Well, that's fair. And I suppose at this point we should probably get digging in a little bit more. And as is the tradition on the weekly podcast here, we're going to go ahead and we're going to look at the top scoring team of the week, which was actually the Midland Raccoons, who put up a 252.6 to 245.8 victory over Chaos Reigns Supreme. I'm sorry, Jeremiah, to put your matchup front and center, particularly when you're talking about the blood pressure and the bile in the throat. But this was a matchup that was won by 6.8 points. How are you doing?
Well, I mean, I wish I didn't start Brady Singer because I think he was like negative 6 points, which was probably the difference. But you know what? It's funny. We were looking at it. I think I was killing it at the beginning of the week, I think.
Yeah,
And
you were.
we were already penciling in my victory. And just goes to show you, don't count your chickens before they hatch. 0-4. I don't think I've ever started 0-4. Yeah, I mean, props to the Raccoons, though. Like, quite a performance by them.
Yeah, Sonny Gray put up a number that feels like, I don't know, 10 years ago, to be honest. But I cannot honestly remember the last time that Sonny Gray had a 42-point week. Yeah. Like everything that the Raccoons did seemed to be just beating you by pitching.
Well, I mean, I have a stat for you, and I feel like you can guess this answer, but do you know who the ERA leader in the American League is as of right now?
I don't actually.
It is actually Sonny Gray.
Wow. I mean, could have guessed
Yes.
that given the lead in, but
Yeah. So.
well, that's fair. But I mean, as I mentioned, the Midland Raccoons just beat you by pitching. His pitching alone put up 203 points this past week. Just
Yeah.
the pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like I don't know if I would have thought that coming into the matchup that that would have been the difference. And I know that's probably a weird take to have, but I mean, Clayton Kershaw's been hell of a pitcher so far for them, which is hilarious to say, but I mean, coming into the year I wouldn't have counted on Clayton Kershaw to be very healthy.
Fair.
For example, which I, you know, I think is a fair assumption, but it was the other guys,
Sure.
right? Like I didn't expect Sonny Gray to be out of his mind, right? Like it's not what I would have thought. So,
You didn't have the Mackenzie Gore 22-point performance lined up either?
I did not know.
Okay.
Mackenzie Gore was kind of just nothing last year. So, and like this is kind of a theme with players. Like I can highlight a few on different teams to make my point, but there's a lot of post-hype sleepers that are kind of coming through. They were high-end prospects and they sucked, and now they're starting to live up to potential. Like Mackenzie Gore is one, Jared Kelnick's another, Jared Duran is another.
Yeah.
Interesting, right?
Yeah. Duran was actually the one that I was going to pull out from your side of this matchup as well. Simply because he's a guy that I was high on. I'm pretty sure I had him and called him up. I think he was I want to say 2 years ago actually for the playoff run.
Okay.
Or it might have been last year actually. And he never seems to deliver on the promise. And even this year he started down in the minors and one injury and then boom. I'm not going to say he's Wally Pippen anybody, but he's had a very, very good season so far. And again, just to give some more props, I appear to be just dead wrong in Ozzie Albies. I hate it because every time I look at his Statcast page and I read the numbers, I'm like, none of this is sustainable. It's all just smoke and mirrors. He doesn't hit the ball hard enough to drive the power numbers that we're seeing. He doesn't have enough consistency to drive the batting average that we're seeing. It's all gonna fall down. And it seems like month after month, year after year, Albies is just here to prove me wrong. And I mean, honestly, screw you, Ozzie.
Well, there's a couple. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. The Duran thing, I'm riding Duran until the wheels fall off at this point.
Sure.
I think the great thing about rebuilding is that you can look around and take these guys because you're not under a roster crunch. You can wait and you can just see where it goes, right? So it's all good with him. Albies, I kind of equate. You know how pitchers sometimes outperform the peripherals? I think of like peripherals. I can't talk, but I think of like Marco Estrada for years. I think of other guys. I feel like Albies is just the hitter version of that, right? Where it's like his peripherals say he should be kind of bad, but he never is that bad.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I mean, the other thing with Albies that I'd be kind of interested in is he hasn't really stolen any bases, which in the past has been a part of his game. Like even pre-rule change, he was a 15 steal guy. And he said in an interview apparently that he wanted to steal 40 bases. I'm waiting, man. I'm waiting.
Yeah, he's gonna have to, I don't know, steal some to get to 40, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's a bit behind the 40 bag pace with his current total of I think zero.
Yeah, we're gonna want to work on that. All right. Well, fair enough. Any other comments on your squad on this close victory, or shall we move on? Because I've got a bit of a theme we're going to be going for this roundup this week.
Yeah, let's do it. I don't want to talk about myself.
All right. Fair enough. Well, then the next matchup that I want to talk about is actually the matchup between the now 4-0 Mad King against the now 0-4 Illuminati, where the Mad King eked out a victory of 239.2 to 238.5. For those math jerks out there, that is a 0.7 point victory for your current number one overall team over the current number 20 overall team.
Yeah, I mean, that was the matchup that I think at the end of the week I was most interested in, because I really wanted Mike to pull the upset. I really don't want to have to hear about how Ryan's going to go undefeated. Like, the sooner we can nip that in the bud, the better.
Okay.
Brent Rooker.
Which is awesome. Just thought I agree. So Ryan pointed this out to me, and I was shocked and saddened.
But if
me and Mike don't make the trade that we talk about later, and he has Josiah
Guerrero's roster, he wins the matchup.
Right.
Which is catastrophic and sad.
Okay.
But, like, for Ryan, like, this is exactly, like, the guys that he has producing are the guys you want, the Mullins, the Machados of the world. And for Mike, like, he had a great week, probably the best week he could expect. And coming up that little bit short is just unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton of thoughts for such an intriguing matchup, but I just think this was the result that was always going to happen. And it sucks that they teased us so much on the way there.
Yeah, it's fair. I agree that based on the rosters coming into the week, this is probably the 99th percentile outcome for Mike, while it might be the 50th percentile outcome for Ryan. So the fact that this was as close as it was kind of interesting. And it does make me wonder if there was perhaps a little bit of panic in the Mad King's clubhouse, not only during the week, but even after, with some snap moves made today, actually. Just, you know, a little bit of panic, a little bit of uncertainty, feeling threatened by the worst team by both points and by record in the league.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to talk about some of these moves, but I do wonder, like, where Mike's direction is at this point. Like, I'm just a bit confused with his moves, right? Like, he's acquiring guys that are hurt, guys that are older. He's meshing them with young guys. I want to know where he's at as well. I think that's also an interesting question we should be asking.
Well, I mean, there's absolutely nothing stopping anyone out there from going and just having their own sit-down conversation interview style with Kaminsky on, you know, the state of his team and the direction that he sees it in. I don't know. Maybe there's something there. John,
is this where I'm supposed to plug the idea? I guess so. sounds like that's what you want me to do. So, for people listening, I don't know how many plays we got this week. I think it was 15, but I am looking to start a series called Better Know an Owner Update. And so that will be a series where I sit down and chat with hopefully all of you in sequence, probably only about a 20 or 30 minute interview, where I come up with questions related to your real life, your fantasy baseball team, and stuff that I'm just generally curious about. And we post it. And for the people that have been in the league for a while, this will be an update. And for the people that we have not heard from before, this will be kind of your intro to the league. So very excited for that. And I'll probably start off with the easy softball down the middle. I think Ryan will be the first guest, actually. So we will start with him.
Yeah, I think I'd be most impressed if you managed to nab Garth MacInnis first and foremost. But yeah, Ryan's a pretty easy one. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Garth MacInnis, you know what? That might be like the holy grail of interviews.
That's your white whale.
1,000%.
Okay. All right. Well, you think about that while I lead us into the next matchup that I wanted to cover today. And again, following this theme, this was another big, big matchup. We, in fact, had two undefeated teams facing off a little early in the season to really get that same sort of upswell of importance and whatnot, but still two 3-0 teams facing off, two of the top teams overall so far. But we had the big beefy baseball boys with Graham putting up a 215.1 to 212.2 over Ian's Staddle Monsters. And that was only a victory of 2.9 points between two undefeated teams. And that one came right down to the wire as well.
Well, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I changed and ended up taking Graham in this matchup. But
you did.
But this was not like the matchup I thought we were going to get, right? Like, I thought we were going to get a bar brawl, like a slugfest, like a 287 to 282 kind of matchup.
Right.
And that's not what we got. So that's interesting on one level. But I think the other interesting thing of this matchup to me is how Jorge Mateo keeps playing for Ian, right? Like, that is found gold if you're him, right?
Yeah.
He's stealing bases. He's hitting for average. The rule changes are making it such that maybe a year or two ago, last season even, if you didn't hit for power and a decent average, you weren't very helpful in our league. But now, if you steal bases, if you can keep your average decent, even if you can't hit the ball out of the yard, you're extremely valuable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a player profile we haven't been used to seeing as valuable. So a lot of people are kind of lagging behind in that regard. But Ian, to his credit, jumped on Mateo right away and has not looked back. And I think it's probably the pickup of the season, if I had to guess.
I mean, at this point, it'd be hard to find stats that would sort of go against. I'm sure somebody has done this, and hey, you know what? If that drums up more articles for us, more content for the website, somebody going in and actually doing the analysis on the pickups of the season so far, I'd read that, and then I would talk about it in the following week. But yeah, Mateo's been good. Otani has been continuing to be Otani. The one that surprised me actually in this matchup is Justin Steele. This is just, I'm not expecting this. And Graham is still just able to find these guys. And it seems like I talk about this week in and week out. It's like all of his guys just, they do just that little bit better than you expect, and good things come of it.
Well, the one thing I do want to say with Justin Steele specifically, I guess, is that he doesn't strike a lot of people out, right? Like, he's going deep into games, but let's also keep in mind that two of his last three matchups were the Oakland Athletics, a Triple-A team, and the Miami Marlins, basically a Triple-A team. Right. And in those matchups, he struck out a combined 8 batters over 12 innings. So he's not overpowering people. I'm not saying it's smoke and mirrors, but I also wouldn't classify him as an ace. I would probably classify him more as a number two, a top 40 pitcher. Still really good. Mm-hmm. Still found money if you're Graham. But let's like slow the roll a little bit. But you know what? At the same time, like, he had decent prospect pedigree. Like, he was somebody that the Cubs were very, very high on, I think. Yep. So at the same time, I'm not surprised to see him start putting it together.
Yeah, if anything, I'm more surprised that the Cubs are actually using some of their young talent, given the number of people that are just wasting away, hiding behind the need to have the minimum salary to Aaron Hosmer get playing time.
Are you talking about Matt Mervis? Because I feel like that's what you're talking about.
I mean, that's just one of the names sitting in the Cubs minor leagues right now that is just raking in AAA and just can't even sniff the bigs. It's unbelievable.
Well, who else? Because that's the guy I think of. Like, who else are you thinking about?
I'm trying now to desperately think of his name, and it'll come to me before the end of this this show for sure. But yeah, it's more the idea that the Cubs are just not necessarily as good at prospects as you want them to be, which is really weird because they are in the middle of their own rebuild, and it's not like guys like Mervis is like young. He's a bit older. Like, just bring him up. What the hell? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, but I think of the Rays too, right? Like, the Rays also do this, and I think of Kyle Manzardo as a good Mervis comp of somebody who's like, what the hell are they doing down there? Or like Curtis Mead, like, he's not young either, 22, I think, turning 23. I know Mervis, I think, is 24, but you get my point, right? Like, these guys shouldn't be in the minors, right? They should just be up with their teams.
Yeah. And again, with the younger team, like the younger teams who are definitely in the rebuild, it makes no sense. But we could talk for hours about all of the problems that the Cubs have had since they beat the curse and then just sort of fell off the face of the earth afterwards. But instead, I'd like to move over to our next closest margin of victory at 5.4 points, where we have Chris defeating the undefeated Squirtle Squad. with a wonderful little 209.7 to 204.3. So another close matchup. But this felt a lot more like Chris scoring more than I think I'm expecting, and the Squirtle Squad definitely underperforming. Thoughts?
That's exactly how I have it down too. Like Chris, this is probably like Chris's 90th percentile outcome if we're talking about ceiling. And I think the Squirtle Squad, this is like Ryan this week. It's, you catch them on a week like this, anybody's beatable.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you can literally boil it down to Jonah Heim outscored whatever catching combination the Squirtle Squad put up. I think it was Will Smith.
Yeah.
And that's the matchup.
Yeah. I mean, pretty easily at that point. We've talked about Jonah Heim on Chris's team in particular in the past. I don't believe this is even the first week that we've seen Jonah Heim as one of his top scorers. So interesting that he's able to deliver consistently for a team that can definitely use it.
Well, Texas in general has been playing really, really well. And Corey Seager hasn't even been in their lineup. So it just goes to show you how weird baseball actually is. But Jonah Heim already has 22 RBI, which if you extrapolate that to like 500 ABs even, we're talking like 150 RBI. So he's having a crazy start to the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good year. And for the Squirtle Squad, definitely low. You know, like none of their players had more than 20 points this week. And so it was fairly balanced. It was just without anyone sort of stepping up and really taking control like a Will Smith has done in the past. They just sort of languished in the low 200s.
Well, I've said this before and I stand by it, but if your top scorers are mostly relief pitchers, you're going to be in trouble. And that's exactly what happened here, right? I can't even say this gentleman's name. I can't even say it. I'm not even going to try to say it. Don't roster this.
Strzelecki, come on.
Strzelecki, okay.
We'll get Kaminsky to ring you up and give you the pronunciation guide.
Thank you. Thank you. I can definitely pronounce Brian Baker's name, so that's
okay.
Good.
Good.
But like when those guys are leading your team, that tells me two things. One, you didn't get a good offensive performance because your point totals were low enough. A good bat should beat out both those guys for top spot.
Mm-hmm.
And two, your starting pitching didn't help you out at all. So I'm not surprised they lost. And any team that follows that recipe is going to be struggling, I think, on a weekly basis.
Which is fair. And I think this is why this looks a little out of place for the Squirtle Squad, because the truth of the matter is they usually find these relief pitchers that can put up 15 to 18 points. And if you've got half a dozen RPs that are putting up 15 to 18 and you still have, you know, a couple of 20-point batters and maybe a 20, 25-point pitcher or two, you're going to have big weeks every single week out. So, yeah, without the spikes, without the big performance by, you know, the stronger bats and the expected pitching, yeah, this is what it looks like. But it's still kind of enviable. I imagine a lot of teams would like to have a bullpen that is consistently putting up this kind of performance.
Well, look, I'll wrap with this. If this is their floor, that's a good floor. That's a floor that'll still keep you in matchups most of the time. And that's where you want to be.
Yeah, just don't do it on the week where 14 teams scored 200 points or more. That's, I think, the takeaway there. But let's go ahead and jump ahead to another point. Another matchup that had a very close point total. Another actual 5.4 margin of victory. And that would be Ben beating out Jamil with that 5.4 victory. And I'm trying to pull it up on my screen and it's not coming up at all. My internet is dying. Am I still on the air?
You are. You are. I'll take from you here. Good. I'll take the baton. So 233.1 for the Star Boys, 227.7 for Jamil. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my take on this is really, I don't have a lot to say, but like this to me is like a bounce back week for Ben. When I look at the point totals, it's exactly what he wants to be doing. If he's going to win, this is what it looks like. Paul Goldschmidt and Jazz Chisholm leading the way. That's exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. But Jack Sawinski just comes out of nowhere. Like another unsung guy this season. He wasn't really a prospect, I guess, like a high-end prospect, but he had a longer minor league career. He's older. He kind of embodies what the Pirates are doing, which is who the fuck even knows. Because I don't even know half the guys on their team that are producing, but they're somehow putting it together. So this is good for Ben. I think this is exactly the kind of rebound performance he needs. It's exactly the kind of thing that reaffirms his status as probably a fringy playoff team. on the other side of it, Jamil, same thing, like Bucks and Wheeler and Perez. Okay, that checks out. But it just seems like the depth, and I keep saying that, isn't here. Like, I don't see the tertiary pieces to support him. And I think that's evidenced in his score here.
Which is fair, although you got to kind of give Byron Buxton a little bit of credit. And actually, maybe it's the Twins that deserve the credit, because I don't believe that Byron Buxton has played a single game at center field yet. Nope. I think he's been a full-time DH all year. And I think actually we talked about this a couple weeks in the past. Mm-hmm. But he is performing. Like, this is kind of what that talent is supposed to look like. It's just too bad we don't get to see him running around center field, because he is a talented athlete.
Well, it's amazing what happens when you only have to focus on one aspect of the game. But I guess my question would be, why didn't they do this sooner? Because, like, you would think with someone that talented and that injury prone that this would have, like, occurred to them that maybe he should just focus on hitting. Because you can't just field, right? That's not an option. So I think you're right. I don't think they've started him at DH once. And it's amazing what it's done for him. Like, he stayed healthy. He's a little banged up sometimes, and they'll rest him here and there. But
sure.
Do you care if he's producing at this kind of clip in real life and in fantasy? Because I wouldn't. And this might be a solution to a lot of guys.
It could be, although it will be very interesting, because Byron Buxton is a perennial keeper candidate. But how does he look if he is DH only next season?
Well, how does Bryce Harper look when he's DH only next season?
He looks like a medical marvel is what he looks like.
Right, but like before, this isn't his first season as DH only. He was DH only coming into last year as well, I believe.
I'm pretty sure he got enough left field in there, but
okay, so I might have been incorrect in that. But Bryce Harper's eligibility has been declining for years, and that, like, he was a center fielder for a while, then he was a right fielder. Now he's going to be DH only. If the bat is good enough, you don't give a damn where they plug into the lineup, because the bat will play anywhere. And I think Buxton's one of those cases.
Well, we'll have to see, and I guess we will put this to the test if come keeper deadline, Buxton still hasn't played any games in the outfield, and Jamil's got a potentially difficult decision to make. But going on a little bit further, the next one I wanted to talk about is actually a bit of an upset, because this is one of the winless teams getting their first win. We got Jeffrey's penis taking out the director with Aiden's team with only a 7.1 point victory, but that was enough with his 198.8 to 191.7 for his first win of the year.
So does this mean that, like, Lim is the new director of our association, or?
Ooh, is it like Highlander principles? Like, you took out the one guy, so you take the title?
Well, that's kind of what I'm wondering, yeah.
All right, well, if you want to call him Director Penis, I will give you that privilege.
Yeah, I would love to have a Director Penis. You know what? This matchup, at the end of the day, I think can literally be boiled down to this. The Sunday, right? I mean, 27 mm-hmm. points to negative 0.4. I mean, that's more than the difference you see, right? And so Aiden called up Outman. He didn't perform. Magically, he decided he was not going to perform on Aiden's team, which is an interesting thing. Must be club posts. Morale is an issue there. But, I mean, you want to talk about guys blocking Matt Mervis. I mean, Trey Mancini is not one of them, right? Like, he's blocking Matt Mervis in a legitimate way.
Yeah.
Yandy Diaz continues to perform. Mm-hmm. But the pitching seems to have come through, if I'm looking at Lim's team. Honestly, Matthew Boyd had a good start. Graham Ashcraft is good. I mean, he's got kind of an underrated pitching staff, if you really think about it, right? Like, Manoa, Ashcraft, Lizardo, and it's solid pen.
Yep. Yeah, Jesus Lizardo is... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think he's going to get into Europa. Like, I really do.
I think he's got a little bit of work to like, hold on to Europa. A 1-3 record doesn't quite get you there yet. I mean, I guess it does technically, but because I think he's 14th overall right now. But you're right. He does have some players that should be good for that sort of, you know, 500 season, being able to be, you know, a little bit competitive, may not take Europa, but can probably eke out a win in the first round, kind of a setup with this team. And a lot of that is on the back of some young guys that even some post-type sleeper types, right? And Jesus Lizardo was a great example of exactly that, because he is doing the things that everyone knew he should do that for whatever reason he wasn't doing before this year. And if you can catch that kind of lightning in a bottle, I mean, that's just value, right? Even if he decides to flip Lizardo later on this year, he's going to get more value than he spent in getting him in the first place, right? And so he's going to come out ahead as a result.
Well, I'd argue, like, this is kind of my point with these guys, is it's not really like lightning in a bottle. You're just patient enough to get the reward, right? Because this is what you thought Lizardo always could be. He right. just took way longer to get there than you thought he would. And a lot of people lose patience in fantasy, and we drop guys and we lose that potential. And sometimes, a lot of the time, it never comes. But yep. credit to Lim, he's had the patience. He's kept with Lizardo because I think he was a prospect originally owned by Lim, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
So props to him for sticking with him.
Yeah, fair enough. And on the other side, I kind of feel for Aiden a little bit because it's not like his top guys weren't pushing, right? Gallen with another ace performance. I do feel bad moving him a couple years ago when he started to fall off and got hurt. Gausman with another good performance. And then Jeremy Pena, the nobody shortstop replacement for Houston.
Well, we both moved Zach Gallen, so we can both feel bad.
There we go.
I actually am the one who traded him to Aiden for Tyler Glasnow, so we can both feel bad.
That's really worked out for you. I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a lot of usage out of them, so. Got to be happy with that.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and keep pushing forward here, because at this point we've gone through all of the, we'll call them close matchups. All of the matchups that we've talked about so far have been 10 points or less. And then we get a bit of a jump, because the next team that we're going to be talking about here is a bit of a narrative in its own right, because I'm not sure if you've realized this, but the Stubby Clap Clappers and Garth MacInnis's team, they're an undefeated 4-0 to start this season. And they just kind of put up a bit of a beatdown on Flex with a 229.3 to 185.9, a 43.4 point margin of victory, which compared to the six we just talked about seems monumental.
This has got to be the story of the season, right? Like, I don't think that's a hyperbole to say this is probably the biggest storyline of the season. I think the thing that's really interesting about Garth MacInnis's team is how it's going about succeeding, right? So I think he is getting like a chunk of like career year performances. So I cite like Jordan Montgomery, Matt Chapman, Bo Bichette is playing out of his mind. Like these guys, yeah, they're good names, but like Matt Chapman, I think we both roasted coming into the year, and he looks like a legitimate MVP candidate through the first month of the season. Jordan Montgomery looks like a top 30, 40 pitcher. Bo Bichette looks like a top 15 player with the bat, and that might be underselling it a bit. Like he is riding five or six guys who are just playing out of their minds while maintaining complete black holes in the lineup, right? Like he continues to play Spencer Torkelson. He continues to play Alec Thomas, Mark Canna, like just complete nothings. And you just wonder, like, could this team be like championship ready with a few pieces? Now he's not going to trade. So this is like a moot question. It's more just a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, he's not going to trade, although he does find some value on the waiver wire from time to time. He also tends to have a pretty decent stable of call-ups just waiting and available, which then get held on his team forever. Right. And Bo Bichette is a good example of that. But to ask whether or not he is championship caliber, my answer is not quite. Right now, he's had a bit of a softer schedule just based on results alone, right? So, I mean, 4-0, that carries, right? Like, that's going to go a long way. But I believe he's only got the eighth or ninth best overall point totals, which tends to get a little more revealed as the season goes on, particularly as you start hitting some of those early round matchups, even in the playoffs, where, you know, you might not have the greatest team and you hit that guy that came in who started 0-4, but then just won the next 15 weeks, right? And just has an absolute buzzsaw of a team. And I know because I've seen that happen, I think almost every year since I started the league, that, you know, some high-ranked team just gets absolutely annihilated by a lower-ranked team just due to circumstance, but also just because that lower-ranked team was there because of record, not because of performance.
So do you think then, like, let's temper it back a bit. Do you think he's a playoff team at this point then?
I do. And honestly, that's got as much to do with starting with four wins in the bank. And this is kind of like what the Rays have right now in real life, right? Like those 20 wins, they're not going away. They're not going to be taken away. And so even if he goes 0-4, that gets him about to the halfway mark of the season, a little shy, but he'll be a 500 team at the halfway part of the season. And that still puts him in that 7 or 8, you know, position, give or take on average. So yeah, like even if he goes 500 for the rest of the season, which we all know he's more than capable of doing, but if this is when he starts going 500, he's probably a 12 or 13 win team. And that'll get you in the playoffs most years.
Yeah. So I guess you're saying it's more likely he makes the playoffs than finishes like 10 and 9 or 11 and 8 then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do we have anything we want to offer to flex? That Hunter Brown call-up's looking pretty damned good.
It's about the only thing that's looking damn good right now. Corbin Carroll's looking damn good too, so I shouldn't say that. But the rest of it, I could take a pass.
Okay.
The prospects, I mean, they're developing, they're marinating, you know. CJ Abrams had an okay week. Riley Green is really struggling. Mm-hmm. Ezekiel Tovar starting to come around. But yeah, he would be the first to admit, I think there's more to come here. He's got lots of guys in the pipe. This is only a partly finished project, and it shows.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fair. And we'll just keep waiting. Flex, you let us know when you're going to start being competitive. You are the namesake of the league. It's kind of a bad look until you get there. So,
okay.
Keep the candles burning, my friend.
We're bringing out the harsh realities. All right. Well, I'm not as harsh. We operate on flex time here. Flex, it's on flex's time, not our time. Bad. You know? Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and take control, take it away from flex time. Let's meet a schedule here and let's advance to our eighth matchup. And this one, I'll be honest, neither of us called. But Chow put up a 219.3 victory, or sorry, 219.3 points over RKR's Bash Brothers, 169.8. And that was a victory of 49.5 points of separation there. So this week, a veritable blowout for Chow, and neither of us called it.
Well, because I think we were riding high on RKR, but I think the problem for us, although, you know what? No, it's not a problem for us. You mentioned this, and I disagreed with you, and you were totally right. RKR is very prone, as you mentioned, to these kind of weeks. And I remember I said, no, he's different. He's different. He's not different. He's not different. This is exactly what you called, and props to you for calling it. I fell for the fact that I thought a few good weeks meant he had moved past this, but he clearly hasn't. And as long as this is in his profile, I'm always going to question whether he's a true contender. And I know that's a tough thing to say, but when you have these weeks in the playoffs, you're done. Like, this could easily be a playoff matchup. Chow and RKR, round one, he's done. So he's got to find a way to get that consistency, to shore up the holes in his team. I think he definitely needs some more pitching. I think that's unquestionable, to get himself on the right track here.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as you're mentioning, we talked about this in the past, and some of it comes down to pitching. Some of it just comes down to bad luck, but it always seems to happen. And I've witnessed it for years in the redacted division. But on the other side of this matchup, Chow now 2-2. He's kind of playing the Garth MacInnis role this year. And in fact, if the records were completely swapped, if Chow was 4-0 and Garth MacInnis was 2-2, everything would feel right in the world. But with this second win, putting Chow currently at about 11th place overall, do you think this puts him on the right path, or is there still more we need to see?
I think it's definitely putting him on the right path. I think he's more dangerous as like an 8 seed than he is as a 1 or 2 seed, actually. Because I do think, like, most seasons Chow's in the top 2 or 3, and we all know what he is. We know he's a juggernaut. We know he's a heavyweight. But if he finishes like 13 and 6 or 12 and 7, whatever it is, and he sneaks in there and he grabs a Garth MacInnis in round one, are you going to bet against him? Because I'm not.
Yeah.
And I just think that's exactly what you were saying earlier, right? Like, he's going to buzzsaw somebody, and it won't surprise me at all. And then he's on his way. So I think he's still dangerous. I think this puts him on the right path. I think he still needs to make a move or two. I think he's got a lot of holes that kind of beg the question of, like, now what?
Yep.
Like Vaughn Grissom, for example, now what?
Yeah.
I think he's still playing Carey Carpenter, for example. So I'd like to see him kind of do a couple things, but I think he's definitely he's here. He's here.
Okay. I mean, I will call out that the patience that he's shown has sort of shown, like, it's worked out for Corbin Burnes at the very least, right? Like, it looked bad for Burnes there with that injury and the DL stint, or sorry, the IL stint there for a bit. It looked grim, but it looks like he's pulled through and he had a good performance this week.
He definitely knows his players better than we do, which is funny to say. And I think he also knows his roster better than we do. So I think he'll know what to do, but I won't be surprised if he makes a big move or two before it's all said and done.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's move bigly over to our penultimate matchup to cover today. One where we had two winless teams facing off, and potentially, much like our undefeated team might have been a preview of the playoffs, this might be a preview of the Vays. But in a stunning 212.8-146.5 victory, Ash pulls it out over Nick the Man Penner with a separation of 66.3 points, a slaughtering in this week of all weeks. And it seemed to be entirely due to Brandon Drury.
Okay, I won't change focus yet. I'll say my piece and then I'll change focus. You know how I feel. Like, Nick is this. This is Nick. Like, why am I trolled every week with this crap that he's good? Like, this is who he is. You know what, Ash? Ash has a higher ceiling than Nick. Ash won't be in the Vays. Ash will be in Europa. He may win a round. He may not. I don't know. I'm not going to go that far yet. Nick will not be in Europa. He will not. Calling it now. This man is in the Vays. It's not even hot because he's 0-4. it's just not happening. And then, like, how dare you? How dare you sell yourself short and not include your own matchup? How dare you?
Well, I haven't got to my matchup yet.
Well, you said penultimate. I'm a moron. But you know,
yeah.
I apologize. I'm a moron. But you know what? When we get to that, you need to take your bow, sir. So I want to make sure you do that. Yeah, I mean, for Ash, like, we know he's capable of a low 200s week, right? Like, he's got guys, right? Yeah. I don't think Nick has these guys. And, like, DeGrom went on the IL now. Big question mark there. Who's going to replace that product? Well, for some of us. You're not questioning anything. This is exactly how you saw it going. He leads the league in whip, by the way. He's just never on the mound. So how can runners score against you when you're not on the mound? But,
right.
Like, who does he have to replace these guys? Because the answer is nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And as I think back to last year, and I mean, flags fly forever, I don't recall Nick making any moves that really sort of like mortgaged the future to get that title. So it's just a very interesting sort of ebb and flow. Maybe all of that partying with a belt in the off season, maybe it took away from some study time that might've been needed to prep for this one.
Maybe his players have stopped listening to him.
Oh my.
Because he made it about himself in the off season. The title wasn't about what the players achieved. It was about what the coach and the manager achieved. And I'm wondering if maybe the players took that to heart and they've checked out.
That's deep. We should start up a GoFundMe for a psychologist appointment.
For me or for Nick? Because I could use a coach.
I wasn't going to say it, Jeremiah, but now that you mention it, it's in the open. You know, we all love you. This is your intervention.
Oh, okay. What's my addiction?
Obviously trading, my friend. Oh. But we'll get to that in a minute because
I don't have a problem there.
That's right. It's not an addiction unless you go to meetings. but the we'll move on to the last matchup, which if you hadn't realized, the ordering of all of these matchup reviews today was based on margin of victory, and I pulled out a minor margin of victory of 77.4 points. In my victory of 250.8-173.4 over the undefeated Attila with the fourth quarter, Jimmy Butlers.
Okay, so do you think that Tillo goes as like Jimmy Butler in real life goes, because Jimmy Butler rolled his ankle.
True.
It makes me think that this is the equivalent of rolling your ankle in fantasy. It's probably a speed bump for Tillo. It's probably going to still make the playoffs and be awesome. But he lost to a team that I think we can objectively say is in like the bottom half of the league.
Okay.
At least right now, right? Yep. Like you are 2-2. I think you're probably in the middle of the pack.
Yep, 13.
So I just want to like shout out the Josh Young trade, because that seems like he's still coming around. And I'm curious on your take on him as a player, because I wonder if you think he's playing over his head or this is exactly the kind of production you're going to expect going forward.
So I'll be the first to say this is a hot week. This was a bit more power from him specifically this week than I think we should normally expect on average. I mean, like in the last 7 days, you know, a home run, a couple doubles, you know, 7 RBIs, but a very low batting average, right? But on this season, he's doing about what I'm expecting, right? And so if you look at sort of the aggregate, you know, he's got 66 points on the year, you know, he's averaging 2.5, you know, he's the 7th best third baseman. And yeah, I that is about where I expect him to be, as sort of a top 10 third baseman. We're not talking top 2 or 3, not yet. Give him some time. But a lot of that is because he is sort of, you know, working through the growing pains, right? He's healthy. That is one of the biggest things that he hasn't had in years past. But he had a healthy offseason, and he was able to come in and do all of the prep as necessary. And yeah, he's putting up a very good season. 270 batting average, a 500 slug. I mean, they're nice to see. They're very nice to see. Obviously, I'd like to see him walk a little bit more. I'd like to see him strike out a little bit less. But at the end of the day, he is a fairly classic third baseman in a lineup that has a lot of power and capability around him. So he can just be an accumulator while he's young before he needs to take over the mantle of being one of the stars on that infield.
I see what you did there. Two things. One, who let this man steal a base, this rumbler? Who let that man steal a base? I want to know that. And the second thing is, has anyone ever told you that Josh Young just looks like young you?
Looks like young me? There's not a mullet in that picture, my friend.
Clearly you shaved it off for the photo. They photoshopped that shit out, clearly.
Well, then that's already just a terrible decision by him and the photographer, because, you know, flags fly forever, but mullets wave right beside them. Let's be fair.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm on board with the mullet take. So, okay. Last question for you, because I love hearing your opinion on your own team. Where do you think you fit in this picture of the league? Are you a top Europa team? Are you a French playoff team? Are you worse or better than that?
No, I think that's exactly the way I've seen myself. And if I'm being fair, it's where I've seen myself for each of the last 3 or 4 years, right? I'm a top 10 team. I'm not a top 5 team. But being top 10 has some value, right? Like if you get some quirks in the schedule that might get you an extra win or two, boom, you're 7th, you're 8th, you're in, right? And in the years past, that was just my division, right? Just riding what ended up being a fairly substandard division in some years, and in other years, just an elite division, right? So I do see myself as in that sort of like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 sort of area. If I'm in the playoffs, I think I can put together a matchup that would make you have to pay attention, right? Like you can't sleep on me kind of a thing. But to be honest, being out, like being in Europa, wouldn't be a shock or a surprise either. The team that I'm putting together is not there yet. I'm still making moves, still waiting for the pieces to come. My minor leagues are growing in power and prospect capital as well as some of the other teams are. And it's just a matter of time to see if they can turn the corner. I've been lucky with some of my call-ups. I've been unlucky with some of my call-ups. So, yeah, I see myself in a little pack, but as I have in the playoffs even every year, I'm going to surprise some people, and I'm good with that.
I could see you winning Europa. I totally could see that. So I know this might be a segue. Maybe it won't. Maybe it's not my call. But I'm curious, like, I know we're going to talk about trades, but I'm curious about the players you've added. How you feel about those? Kind of break that down. Let us know how you what the point of those moves were, because you said you're making moves. So
yeah, So I imagine you're probably talking about the Anthony Rendon drop.
Yes.
One of the things that kind of gets called out. And honestly, it was just a matter of, you know, I don't want to carry with my makeup. I don't want to carry an extra bat. I'm happy going lean. And if one of my top 10 goes down, I'll pick up somebody else for, you know, for 10 days or whatever. I'm fine with that. Okay. So I don't want to carry the extra bat with the way I'm currently made up. I have every confidence in my ability to build a bullpen on the fly and make it work for me week in, week out. And so that put, you know, when everybody started coming back off of the injured list, and then as well, when I picked up Ketel Marte in a deal, there were decisions that needed to be made, right? And so Max Muncy was coming off the paternity list. Ketel Marte was there. Josh Jung was there. You've got to pick three of those four. And Rendon's a pretty easy drop. I mean, he's having an okay season, but am I going to hang my hat on, oh, yes, no. Anthony Rendon is what I need to hold on to instead of a Josh Jung or a younger Ketel Marte or just a far superior, this season at least, Max Muncy. It was a pretty easy drop for me.
No, that tracks. That tracks. I also do mean the Ketel Marte and the Jose Berríos deal that you made. So, you know, that too.
Fair. Well, we'll get to the trades in just a minute because first, as is tradition, we need to review where we're at with the picks. And in week four, somewhat incredibly, actually, you found your way into getting six of these crazy matchups right.
Cool.
And I only found three correct. And so easily my worst week. But more impressively, I think, overall, is that, Jeremiah, you've actually made up the gap that started in week one. And you've actually taken the lead. You have a one pick lead over me, currently 26 correct to my 25 correct, which, let's be honest, I think that that plays for the week, right? Now we've got a close matchup overall following a blowout in the weekly performance.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't exactly feel safe with the way the matchups have been going, but it's nice to be back at around 500. So we'll take that, and it keeps it interesting for everybody else. But if I request that you get like a feature, are you gonna get in there? You know,
a feature. Well, what kind of feature are you talking about? I'm very old, Jeremiah. You can't just be using the hep lingo of the kids.
Okay. All right. Let me antiquate this for you. Perhaps like someone in your family might be willing to sing a few bars on your potential track.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I have all of the musical talent for my family, which should say an incredible amount by itself. But yeah, we can see whether or not, I don't know if they'll sing, but maybe I'll get them to spit a couple verses, you know?
Spit's fine, yeah. Spit is what I meant. I shouldn't have said sing. Spit.
Okay. Because, yeah. I mean, otherwise you're getting my four-year-old, and right now she just seems to sing a lot about butts, because that's funny to four-year-olds.
And you can work that in there.
Yeah, the background, the backing track might just be butt. And you know what? This might actually be the winning combination if I can't find a way to pick better than you going forward.
I mean, I feel like I speak for the league when I say we would be up for that.
You'd be up for the butt song?
Absolutely.
Possibly with a butt dance video in the background? Kids are weird, man.
I don't know if that's appropriate, but okay. I think the audio track would be fine.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll take the note. I'll put it in the parking lot, and we can cover that later. Because we're already running a little bit long on this edition, and I definitely want to talk about some trades, because it turns out, Jeremiah, that you know, you're not an addict yet, apparently, but you've made some trades this week since our last sit down, and some of them are massive. I throw, for example, the trade that you and Kaminsky made. Some of them are a little more, you know, understated, like the deal that you made with Jeffrey this week. And then there are some that just kind of hold a lot of kind of big and important names in a league like our own. As an example, the one that you made with Ryan today. Which of those three would you like to break down with us today?
Oh man, I had to pick. Let's do the Mike one. I feel like that one got a lot of critique. So let's talk about that because Mike also made some moves too as well. So
true. Yeah, so I mean, that's a fairly classic Jeremiah trade. Jeremiah has been a part of trades like this many times in the year. I know I've been on the other side of them. Usually it looks like Jeremiah moving his entire farm system for one or two key pieces that he's looking for in his build, typically in the preseason, if not the month of April. And it typically looks a lot like this, where there's a lot of lottery tickets. Some of them work out, some of them don't. But there's always generally a bit of regret after the fact, which I wonder is what if that's where Mike is going to be. But in return for basically the better part of Mike's farm system, he gets effectively Julio Urías. Like Andrew Chafin and Tyler Glasnow, I'm not high on Glasnow. I think I need to see him prove himself before. I think we talked about that last week. And Chafin is just a solid lefty relief pitcher in a very, very difficult division.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to put some stuff out into the ether because I think Mike would be fine with it. And he's in a different time zone, so he won't listen to this anyway. This to me seems like the kind of deal that a contending team would want to make. But the problem was contending teams don't have the farm system Mike does.
Okay.
Or the drive to make a deal like this. So that was the weird part for me, for one, was like nobody really wanted to pony up anywhere near this but Mike. So the hot take, and this will probably make you, I don't know, surprised or angry. He told me after the deal was done, and this was reflected in the moves he made after, but he thought the best piece by far was Tyler Glasnow.
Okay.
He actually was not a fan of Julio Urías, which was evidenced by him flipping him to Chow for two hurt guys and Andrew Vaughn, and an elite prospect in DePaula as well. But
sure,
that explains the flip. So it was a partly finding somebody who valued Glasnow similar to the way that I do, because I do think that when he's healthy, he's an elite pitcher. He's just not healthy very often. Kind of like a Jacob deGrom light, I guess.
Very light, but sure.
Very light. Well, I do wonder though, like in terms of what Mike gave up, like it was a lot of quantity. There was some quality at the top, but I do want to say that like a lot of it was quantity, right? And so you're hoping some of these lottery tickets hit. I'm obviously in a rebuild. I'm hoping those top end guys hit, and that would be great for me. But if they don't, I mean, it's going to be a longer road to hoe, I guess.
Right, and so you've already sort of strung his carryover trade into it, which is going to be part of sort of my greater analysis in this regard as well. But one of the pieces that I was very surprised to see him move was actually Andrew Painter, who was probably, without the injury, the top prospect of this list of volume, right? And, okay, you can talk maybe it's Henry Davis, depending on which list you're looking at. But at the very least, Andrew Painter is widely regarded as one of the top pitching prospects in the big leagues right now, or sorry, in baseball right now, I should say. And he just got hurt. And that sucks. But do you know what happens to injured minor leaguers? The answer is nothing. They just hold a cell in a spreadsheet that much longer. And so we turn the page and we see, sure, he flips Julio Urías and he picks up Jeffrey Springs and Walker Buehler, who aren't going to hold cells in a spreadsheet. They are going to hold actual physical spots on his roster for the rest of this year and for Springs' case, a portion of next year as well. And that really surprises me because that doesn't feel like it's the kind of sort of roster economy that, as you're putting it, a competing team, a contending team would want to use.
Well, I think that's a fair point. I would challenge, like, Andrew Painter is very similar to Tyler Glasnow at this point in his career. He's tall, he's lanky, he's 6'8", throws really hard. He could be lined up for Tommy John surgery.
Sure.
He seems like the kind of guy who, yeah, he's amazing, but he might just be hurt a lot. Fully noted point, he does only take up an Excel sheet. He won't cost you a keeper spot. And that's why I think for Mike, the deal is a bit weird, because it's like, this would make sense if you had a surplus of prospects and you wanted to take a jump forward. Mm-hmm. But like, why invest in guys that are hurt? Right, like I got the Glasnow and Urías deal, but then like flip Urías for something better than that. It was just like a weird side move, I guess. The deal,
yeah.
right. Like the Urias part made sense if he was going to flip him, but it just was weird that he flipped him for injured guys. But I think he wanted depth. I think he believes in those guys. And I'm not sure he's done. Like, I'm not 100% sure he won't just flip those guys too. So we'll see. I know you were concerned that, like, maybe he had no direction, and I still kind of question his direction, but I think he wants to take a step forward. I think that's his goal, is to get out of the bases here.
Well, I'll own my concern, and I'll air it live here on this wonderful podcast, Jeremiah. But as you well know, because I was talking with you about it, my concern was that this was Mike leaving the league, that this was Mike basically saying, to heck with it, I'm done. And let's be fair, there's a lot going on, obviously, in his personal life. You know, he's been moving. He's across the sea, doing all of that stuff. He's got his business interests to keep a hold of as well. And when I saw a move like that with that much, and yeah, it was still volume, but there was still high level talent in there, in Harrison and Meyer, Jack Leiter, if you like him, like this came across to me as somebody who was not going to be here to realize any of these pieces. And I got worried because I'm a proud redacted person. And I was in that division with Mike for, you know, every year until this one, obviously.
I think that's a valid concern, but I think him making another deal is proof he is invested. And I think it's proof he has a plan in place. I don't know what that plan is. And I'm not going to pretend to think that it makes sense to me on a higher macro level, because it doesn't. But if it makes sense to him and he's willing to pull off a subsequent deal, I think that lessens the chance he's leaving the league.
Well, I certainly hope so, because that would be a blow to the league in my personal and professional opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So some other trades happened this week. We had a smaller one between the Squirtle Squad and Ben as well. You know, a couple of relief pitchers moving around. The squad did their thing of acquiring soon-to-be injured Houston starters, as was called out wonderfully on Slack as well. Any other comments you want to make around this one?
No, I mean, I think I'm not looking at it off the top of my head, but I think it was a minor thing, right? Like just a couple of Luis Garcia and
Jose Urquidy going to the squad.
Yeah,
Phil Maton and Peter Strzelecki. Apparently, there's too much rye in this Coke.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of take on this. Like Phil Maton was definitely added off the wire not long ago, which I think is funny because they call out, you know, Ryan or whoever for trading to Ash, a guy picked up off the wire, and then they do a similar thing. So that's irony at its best, but yeah, sure. Nothing else to say.
Okay. I'm going to skip over then the Luis Robert for Varsho and Leiter. You and I have talked about that one in the background a bit. I'll summarize it quickly as being, I don't have the same faith in Robert's health as you do, and therefore Varsho feels like the better pick. But let's move aside, because I think the one that I want to talk about the most here is the big deal that went down earlier today, where you move, or well, we'll go the other way. You receive Ryan Stanek, Tristan Casas, Gunnar Henderson, and a ninth round pick, and you move Olson, Taylor Ward, Yennier Cano, Oswald Peraza, and your first round major league pick. There's a lot going on here. Do you want my take first, or do you want me to go second?
Well, you go ahead, but I want to preface it by saying you're on an island, I think, with this take. Like, okay. I really do. Like, if I look at the reactions in Slack and I look at whatever, like, I think you're alone on this.
And I'm okay with that. You know what? If you can't be alone on an island, they won't let you write articles on trades for an entire season as I did. And if I were still writing that particular periodical, I would call this out as a panic move by Ryan. Specifically, he is selling low on an underperforming Tristan Casas. He is selling very low on an underperforming Gunnar Henderson. And more than anything, it's the timing that I'm questioning, because I'll point out that Ryan is still 4-0. And this past week, while yes, he was in a very, very close matchup and he almost lost to a winless Mike Kaminsky, the fact of the matter is he had the fourth highest point total of the week. That's including a Tristan Casas, and that's including a Gunnar Henderson. If you are putting up those point totals and you are undefeated, Why are you selling low? I understand that that might be a weakness on your team, but this is definitely an undersell for the top prospect. You know, if depending on the list you were looking at, it was either Gunnar Henderson or it was Corbin Carroll at the end of last year and coming into this year. Those are the, that was the best prospect in all of baseball. And you're moving him for what? Matt Olson? I'm sorry. You can be high on Matt Olson. I don't know that you are top prospect in baseball high on Matt Olson in a league where you have an infinite amount of time to own people. It's not like Gunnar Henderson's contract is expiring on your team. He is hyper young. He is hella talented. And sure, he's struggling a bit and he might get sent down, but he hasn't been set down yet. Tristan Casas is also talented and he might get sent down, but he has not been set down yet. And so I see this as overreaction theater. And I really question why Ryan felt like he needed to. I question the timing and the resulting undersell. That's my take. You, I think, did great. You sold high on Matt Olson and his declining stats. You sold very high on Taylor Ward and his complete absence of power. And sure, Cano's a fine piece. And Oswald Peraza is also a fine piece. But let's be fair. If all things are equal and all of these players are performing at the same level, you're not pulling a Tristan
Anderson.
I get a Ryan Stanek. I think he can pull that with this package. But this is a hard, you know, buy low on two great potential talents and a sell high on just having a good season.
Okay. So to counter, and I note all these points. I think they're valid to a degree, but I also think Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson are 1-2, but one is performing and one is absolutely not. I think they're both gonna get sent down. And I agree with you. You know, maybe that's the time to move them. But if you're concerned about that, that is a valid concern. I'm higher on Olson than you are. I think the league is too. I mean, he's on pace for 400 points, for gosh sakes. Like, and he's not over 30. You know, he's 20. He just turned 29. He's on pace for 400 points. Casas is unplayable at this point. What you're talking about is all theoretical. Ward, okay, Ward, I'll acknowledge his flaws and his warts, and he's a flawed player. But Olson is single-handedly could solve a huge problem for Ryan, right? Like, you're upgrading from somebody who's on pace for maybe 150 points to on pace for 400 points. That is monumental. And Ryan is all in. Like, this is the time of year when, not the time of year, but for Ryan, like, he's elite. He's not fucking around in, like, seventh or eighth place. Like, he is 4-0. He's always at the top. He needs to solidify his team. Does Gunnar Henderson and Tristan Casas have amazing potential? Sure. They sure do. But I go back to so many trades I made with Ryan that were based on potential. Like, you know, I traded Acuna to him for like Joe Adell and Walker Buehler. And Joe Adell was like a 5-tool prospect who was amazing. Well, he's been nothing. I mean, there is countless examples of guys who were dripping in tools and they became literally nothing. Olson's something right now. He's going to be something. For the next 2 or 3 years, 4 years at least, he will be something. At this point, I would rather Olson. I'd rather Olson next year than either of those players. I'd rather Olson 2 years from now than either of those players. And okay. Ryan's firmly in the now. For me, yeah, I can sit around and wait. Absolutely. Sure, I can. But would I be surprised if one of those guys completely busts? No. Would I be surprised if it takes them multiple years to figure it out? No. And would I be surprised if both of them get sent down relatively soon? No. Now, you could hold until that point, but I think it's harder to sell, especially Casas, if he's sent down.
Sure.
So
following all of that logic, if the decision comes to sell low on one of them, that's much easier to defend, right? And sure, yep. Casas is probably the one that looks really, really bad. Looks completely out of place and is probably going to get sent down. Gunnar Henderson at least has a track record of half a season last year of putting something kind of impressive together. I guess it was less than half a season, quarter season last year, but putting something impressive together and really making it work. So we've seen it. It's possible he can do it. And he's doing it in, you know, one of the best divisions in all of baseball, right? So sure, if you're saying Casas is a miss, I can get behind that. If you're saying Gunnar Henderson can't turn it around, I'd want to wait on that because this is very much a mortgaging the future for the now, which happens all the time in a dynasty league, but it rarely happens for a team that is so solidly in the top echelons who has the time and the ability to wait. That's all the question.
Yeah, I mean, I'll buy that point on Henderson a lot more than I will on Casas, but I think the other point is, do you get Olsen for Casas? From my perspective, I would never do that, right? Maybe you pull somebody else. Maybe yep. There's somebody else you're equally high on, and maybe that's there. I don't know. I can tell you from myself and my experience with Casas in this league, he was not valued almost anywhere else. So yep. I don't know how that would go. If you're saying he could flip Henderson and Casas 6 weeks from now and get the same package, and then he's like insulating himself from the risk because he has more information, I mean, I'll agree to that.
Yep.
But I think the general premise of what he was doing was solid, and I think the league generally agrees with that, right? Like, I don't think anyone's voting for me in the straight. Again, I think you're on an island here, which is fine. You're good with that. But I do think there's a consensus that Ryan made the right move.
Well, we'll just have to wait, and we'll see whether or not this particular trade ends up ranking up there with one of the trades that I have made in the past, where I moved I acquired Kenley Jansen for the low price of a Luis Robert, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Joe Adele when they were all in the minor leagues. So we'll see how this trade feels in 2 or 3 years then.
Well, I mean, by your logic, two of those guys fucking suck. So you only lost one good guy.
Well, all of them are very talented and don't necessarily manage to find a way to put that talent on the field. So, yeah, in that sense, you know, I definitely won out with Kenley Jansen. But I don't think there's anyone on this planet or the next one over that would say that that was the right move, given any ability to look into the future. That's the beauty of this league.
Projecting his past trauma on Ryan, confirmed.
I'm allowed to do that because Ryan was the person that I traded those guys to.
Oh, I notice he still rosters all those guys too.
You're right. Absolutely. All right. Well, enough on the trades, because we are at about the 20% point of the year, which means we're about to turn the corner into the quarter mark. And as we all know, the quarter mark in baseball is when all of the big teams really take that hard look at their squad and make the moves necessary. So as we move into our quarter poll, into week 5, shall we go over the situation and make our call and our picks here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go ahead and start at the top. It's always my name at the top because that's how it sorts when I look at the scoreboard. Okay. So right now, this is actually one of the matchups that you and I differ on. For the first time this season, I'm putting my own hat in the ring, my own name, calling my own name, put me in coach. I'm ready to play. I have picked myself to beat Ash this week. You picked Ash.
Oh, I'm stupid.
Okay.
I mean, that's all I got to say on this one so far. You are ready to play, sir. You are up 43-13, so I think you're good.
Yeah. It's early. We'll see how it works out. Ketel Marte decided to join the fun with a home run tonight, so that's always good to see.
Well, that's but good. All right, he didn't do that for me very often. So that's
this is accurate. This is very, very fair. All right, well, let's move on to the next one where we might both be stupid because we both picked Jeffrey's penis team, or sorry, Director Penis, as you've now named him, to win out over Nick the Man Penner. But it seems like Director Penis is struggling to get the point total up.
So struggling to get hard. Yeah. I I'm not picking Nick the rest of the year. So I don't know what you want me to say.
Well, Domingo Germán had a very nice outing so far, and that is definitely bolstering Nick's team. So we'll see how that one moves on. But the next one, I feel a little more confident because we both picked Aiden as the former director of the FFF BPA, to win out over Kaminsky, who hasn't even found 10 points as we sit here at 10:30 on Tuesday night.
I don't even think he's going to find 120 points this week. So there you go.
Wow, that's a hot take. All right, you heard it here first. Kaminsky will not find 120 points. All right. Mm-hmm. The next one is another one that you and I diverged on. I have been picking Ben early, and I've just walked away from it. And I mean, it burned me this past week, obviously. But I'm on Tillo this week in a comeback performance after the, how did we call it? The shellacking that I handed him this past week. I think this is him getting a little angry, and he's taking it out on your pick, the Starboys, so far.
This is not looking good for me. I think I'm going to give up my lead this week.
You had it for so little time, and you know, I hope you've enjoyed it.
I have. We've been getting to know each other a little bit, but
right.
She's leaving now. She's found a better man.
Okay. All right. That's weird, but okay. the next matchup that we've got to go through here, we've got the first place overall, Mad King, fresh off of his weird trade, currently beating up on Chow, but we both picked Ryan to take this one.
I'm kind of surprised in that. I'm kind of surprised I didn't take Chow. It seems like a me thing to do.
Okay. Mm. Are you going to waffle?
No.
Okay.
If I'm allowed to waffle, there's another matchup I would waffle on.
Okay. Yeah. We'll let a waffle happen. I mean, for so the audience knows, we do exchange our picks before the week starts to keep it all above board. But you know what? In the spirit of you know, the podcast and content, I'll let you waffle. I'm good with that.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, let's see if it's this next matchup. Because right now we're both on Jamil and the Husan Alliance to take down Chris's Mummy's Good Boys. Although Chris does have an early lead.
Yeah, I mean, kind of surprised. I'm kind of surprised. No, this is not the matchup I was going to waffle on. Okay. We both picked Jamil. I'm still confident in that. Chris is not that good.
Fair enough. Okay, well then the next matchup that we're going to talk about here is RKR with an early lead over Flex, and we both have RKR.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see, even with RKR's bad week, I don't see this going any other way. Like, Flex on a good week is lucky to get like 160 points, so I just don't see how he wins.
Yeah, that's fair. RKR always brings the bloody heat when he goes against division rivals, and maybe he still looks at Flex as being one in some way. I'm expecting RKR to just put the absolute hurt locker on Flex this week, so this one won't be close. I guess the next one we should talk about has our twin selections of the Squirtle Squad beating Chaos Reign Supreme. Now, it wouldn't be your own matchup that you're looking to waffle on, would it?
Hell no. Last week this happened and I totally caved. So no, I'm not betting on myself. No way.
Okay. All right. I had to check. But yeah. Right now, for what it's worth, just to get it out there, you've got a sizable lead of about 55 points over the Squirtle Squad with your 91 points so far. So it'd be a fair one to waffle, but I see what you're doing here. We'll move on. We're both on the Squirtle Squad. We'll see how that pans out. I guess that would mean that the one that you'd like to waffle on is the one where we both picked Stads to end the reign of Garth McInnes's undefeated streak, which is not looking good right now.
Yeah, so I mean, I was just confused. Clearly I didn't read the sheet properly. The one I was waffling on, we have made different selections, so that's fine. I mean, this is shocking to me. Did we both pick Stads?
We have both picked Stads, and right now we are 70 point underdogs.
We got to eat that selection. Yeah. We got to eat that shit. Okay. I just have no words. Yeah.
We might be looking at Garth McInnes as a 5-0 team.
Well, frick, man. If Michael Kopech's going to suddenly put it together and drop a 19 point start or whatever it is, like, yeah. League's in trouble.
Yeah, we'll save that. Obviously, we will have this conversation next week if that happens. But goodness me, undefeated 5 weeks potentially for Garth McInnes is impressive. All right, well let's go ahead, go down to our last matchup of the week. We're both actually on to win this.
He has an early
lead, but this is a close matchup between the big beefy baseball boys and the Midland Raccoons.
Okay, so this is the one I was waffling on. I, for some reason, thought I thought we were different, but I actually kind of like the Raccoons.
Okay, so are you waffling yourself into our Raccoons pick? Because I will make this up.
I'm, Yeah, I interwaffle myself with raccoons. But as someone who saw them firsthand last week, so I full disclosure, I think I made my pick on Saturday. And I think on Saturday they were still behind in my matchup and they hadn't put up a big point total yet. So I was kind of like, you know, like whatever. Watching them through the weekend and watching their week and looking back on it, like I think they could fully beat Graham. If they put up another week like they did last week, I don't know if Graham's going to win. So for the interest of content, and I think the thing is their Red Sox players are on fuego right now. Verdugo, Yoshida, like you can't stop those guys. You know, all it takes is the Jays coming to town and throwing out Kikuchi and Barrios and they are good to go.
Yep.
So I really like what they're doing and I really like their chances this week actually. So I'm going to waffle my way onto a Raccoons pick and live or die by that.
All right. Well, I have accepted your waffle in kind and that's what it's currently at. So we now have Graham for me, Raccoons for you in that last matchup. Is there anything else that you would like to cover this evening before we wrap it up for the people there at home?
No, I think we've droned on long enough.
All right. Well, then I want to give my thanks and appreciation to you, Jeremiah, for joining me again this week. And for everybody else out there, good night and good fantasy.